You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday afternoon, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. And David, we've had a long weekend in the United States of America. We've just had some good jobs data out of the United States of America. The markets seem to love it. The S&P, as I speak now, up around about 1%. I don't quite understand why, but overall, quite a good feeling about stock markets worldwide.
There is a good feeling, and no one's quite sure why. And it's—I don't think anybody can put their finger on it. And I think most money managers are really battling to make sense of it, unless they believe that we've peaked with the COVID-19, you know, with the pandemic, and that things are slowly going to get better. Or alternatively, even if it's delayed, or at least we're going to point in the right direction. But Lindsay, it started in China this morning, and even then, no one could make sense of why China suddenly went through the roof. You know, why we had, I don't know how it ended up, why we ended up about 5% or thereabouts. So it's baffling, and I think, you know, you're hearing the same story. Okay, we'll travel along a little bit. We're going to do this liquidity, you know, the normal story. But wait until this date, then we'll be tested. You know, and that we've been hearing all along. So it's confusing, and I'm feeling better about the markets. You know, by better, I'm feeling happy. Yeah, this is great. You know, but I must admit that I can't put context to what happened today. ISM services gauge has come out now, which is very positive. So you're getting some positive readings on the economy in the U.S. But still, I don't think it's not really substance enough to kind of justify where we are. But we're there, you know. That's what I'm saying. Whatever the reason is, people are buying shares.
Yes, people are buying shares. I'm just looking at, if you look at any of the websites that you normally follow, whether it be Reuters or Bloomberg or CNBC or the FT or the Economist, whatever, lots of different sort of differing headlines. And as you quite rightly say, nobody seems to know what to say because, for example, Citi sees markets in a stalemate. Citi, the financial institution, sees markets in a stalemate over the next 12 months as bulls and bears collide. So there's two different stories here. Why was Shanghai up 5.7% this morning, as you referenced earlier on? Is it because it's been manipulated by buying from the state, or what is it? Because there's no discernible number that's come out that says we have to buy this market because it's worth being up nearly 6%. It just doesn't make sense to me.
No, there isn't. There isn't any sense to today's movements, but you know, we've got to start digging for it and find out, you know, because generally we're wrong and the market's right.
Well, I'm wrong.
I mean, you know, we've been pretty cautious. I must admit that against this backdrop, I've kind of restructuring portfolios, and I've spoken to you about this before. I said, okay, look, let me get rid of some of the old stocks. You know, funny enough, I'm even getting rid of Berkshire. I know they've gone and they've put in $4 billion, which doesn't even dent their petty cash. You know, they've got, I think, over $100 billion. I don't know, was it $4 billion? I don't think it was a massive play that he's making on that. And I looked at Berkshire. I'm a great admirer of Warren Buffett, you know, and I have been for years. But over the last couple of years, I've done nothing, you know. So I'm saying, hold it. I think I can do better.
David, that's interesting. Don't tell Alec Hogg that, because he's still in love with Buffett.
well, Buffett's Buffett. But Berkshire has kind of fallen behind where the markets are. And, you know, I'm looking at I'm trying to pick out, okay, where's the growth going to be? I'm not doing the value investment type stuff and saying, okay, you know, this company looks has been battered down. It's worth a lot more. I'm going the other way and saying, where's the money going to be spent in the next 3, 4, 5 years? What looks interesting around that? And I think there's quite a bit of excitement. So I'm not being influenced by what we're seeing now, but rather where we'll kind of be a few years' time. The shape of the economy. That doesn't include Tesla, by the way. You know, there's another one I can't. But that's how I've decided to approach the market. So I can't make head or tail of what's happening now. But let me look for these emerging businesses and go there.
Yes, exactly. So, and that's what worries me a little bit about Berkshire Hathaway, or Berkshire, as you call it. Warren Buffett's Berkshire buys Dominion Energy natural gas assets in a $10 billion US dollar deal. The conglomerate, Berkshire, that is spending $4 billion US dollars to buy the natural gas transmission and storage assets of Dominion Energy, including the assumption of debt. The deal totals almost $10 billion US dollars. Now, to me, it's flying in the face of what other large fund managers are doing, whether it be the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is getting rid of its fossil fuel assets. He seems to be going in a completely different direction. It's almost like he's the Donald Trump of investing at the moment. He's going against the flow, and maybe that's why he's successful. Who knows?
No, that's what I'm saying. Hold on a sec. You don't want those assets.
No, you don't.
If you want, if funny enough, I loved the company, was Royal Dutch Shell.
Yes.
I also said, okay, you know, they're cutting back their dividends. I used to buy them for the dividend payers, etc. I can't see anything really happening in natural gas or in energy over the next few years.
No.
And so I switched into a clean air company called Next Era, which is in Florida, which does have some fossil fuel, but most of it is wind and most of it is solar power. And it's a very successful utility down in Florida. And it also ticks all the boxes for most of the boxes for ESG, you know, it's clean air and so on. And I feel better with that play. So I'm saying that hold on, we can do those kind of deals rather than go for what Buffett has, are Kraft Heinz going nowhere, a major calamity. It just, you know, he's going to have to write off an absolute fortune, because at the moment he hasn't written it down, because it has a different qualification in his balance sheet. It's not a trading stock. Anyway, and so that's, you know, I think you've got to approach it with a different kind of perspective on this market. Of course, a lot of these people, there's a lot of stocks we're buying, which are mainly tech-based, people will say expensive. I'm not going to argue. You know, those things have never put me off, unless they're like Tesla, which is a 300 PE, you know, something like that. But if it's 21, 22, 23, that's not going to put me off buying them. So Lindsay, that's the way I'm approaching it. But if you had to say to me today, as we're talking about, why is the market up? You know, is it going to be up or down tomorrow? I can't read it anymore. You know, I can't read what's driving markets at the moment.
No, nor I, but I can tell you what's driving one particular share, and we haven't spoken about this because the trading statement came out on Friday evening, and that is Capitec. Suddenly, this thing is unraveling a little bit. And Garth McKenzie, or one of my regular commentators, said, you can be right after 2 years, but that means that you're wrong. In other words, you know, if your timing is right eventually, it doesn't mean to say you're wrong in the first place. And I was talking about this with that chap from Viceroy Research about a year and a half ago about this thing, and he was very vociferous and forceful in saying that there is some accounting niceties there that just don't seem to add up. And that Friday trading statement, the way I looked at it, David, is that they came out and it's almost as though they said, okay, we've got to come clean here, and they're going to blame the coronavirus on these impairment charges and bad debt provisions and all that sort of thing. And it seems to me they've lumped it all into this one statement. What did you make of it? Because the share price down over 7% today.
Look, that's big for Capitec.
It's huge.
I'm not going into the conspiracy theory side of it.
No.
You know, I look at it more practically, the practicalities of it, the worry is that they generally service the lower end of the market or lower income earners. And the amount that they first, in all respects, they're writing things down. Number one, the impairments. That's the biggest worry.
Yes, indeed.
You know, they said that these people were not necessarily delinquent. They'd all been paying up to the end of February, but things have changed. And suddenly the big worry is are these people who might have only been, you know, who might have been delinquent this quarter, are they necessarily going to come back the next quarter? I don't see it that way. I see South Africa not helping them out. I see things really dramatic here. And it's going to take a long time before those people get their jobs back. They might have been waiters. you know, they might have been shop assistants. They might have been in those kind of jobs. Those particularly hurt. So I'm very, very worried about those signals that we saw in that trading report.
Me too.
They also, the deposits were down. Their lending was down. Transactions were down. In other words, you know, activity going through their books. So it's pointing towards very difficult conditions. They're well capitalized. No one's challenging that.
Mm.
But as things get worse, you know, which I think they are, and it's not them. It's not only them. It's all banks. Mm. I think it's the whole financial sector. You must read through, you know, you must read through to the whole financial sector, because those are the issues that we're going to face in this country. This is not America. Hey? This is not Europe. This is South Africa, where we're already struggling. On the fiscal side, we're already struggling on the business side.
I looked at a long-term graph of this particular share, and graphs, particularly for a stock like Capitec, which is to a certain extent, I don't say it's been manipulated, but it's certainly a managed share price, in my opinion. This is not the opinion of you, but I think it looks like a 400, 500 rand a share, which is dramatic to the downside. But if you look at the big long-term graph, if things don't turn out well for the South African economy, this is where it could be, and other banks could follow. But Capitec looks the most vulnerable to me.
You know what? If you measure this, I'm just seeing where they are today, because they've come back.
They're below 800 now, aren't they?
Because they're below 800, which takes it. Let's ignore March, because that was a quick down and up. But it looks like it's starting to form like tombstones and double, you know, what do you call it? Head and shoulders.
Yes, all that sort of stuff. Exactly.
All that nonsense. And I think this, we now go back to 2017. So we've given up 3 years. And if we break through this, you're right. I think we could lose considerably more than in another 100 at least, just on a trot. You know, could be even worse than that. You're dead. If you're reading the charts, yes. Mm. I didn't realize it, to be honest, Lindsay, and I'm saying this. I've still assumed that the chart was in upward territory, but I haven't looked at it for some time.
No,
and this is not a
it's broken down. Mm. I'm on form at the moment. I'm on form at the moment, by the way, because I mean, last week we were talking about Manchester City versus Liverpool, and I said Manchester City are going to thrash Liverpool, and then of course they did do 4-0. But I'm on a bit of a trot, so you've got to stick with me just for a week, and then it'll evaporate again.
That's okay. But you're right in this one.
Yeah.
I think it has broken through territory if it holds at today's levels. And you know, you could see, I think it's quite you're talking to Garth McKenzie. He knows the charts.
He does, yeah. He's very, very good at that. Yes.
And it could pick up some signals there. But let's put it this way, it's under pressure. And I think most of I see South Africa. I was trying to explain this morning, because there's still a lot of fund managers who are, pushing South Africa. And I look after other people's money.
Yes.
And when you look after other people's money, you've got to be extra caution. You can't be frivolous. You know, you can't take punts with it. You can't calculate, you know what I'm trying to say? You can't just, let me try this. I can do that with my money. But you've got to be cautious, and therefore you've got to turn things over 100 times. And I see the South African market as a survival economy.
Mm.
In other words, we're looking at companies on the strength of, can they survive? Are they going to survive this? Not are they going to grow through it. Are we going to grow from here? It's, are we going to survive? And that worries me if is Pick and Pay going to be able to hold on? And, you know, is Mr. Price going to be able to hold on? Not grow, just hold on. And yes, they might grow. Why? Because Edgar's goes out or something like that, you know, Mr. Price, and picks up some trade from there. And that worries me. I can't invest other people's money on the strength of survival. It's got to be in companies that are going to prosper. Capitalized, selling a good product and so on.
So how do you look at it, David? Sorry, before you go on, how do you look at it? Because it was about a year ago, I was speaking to an investment strategist at a well-known asset management company, and he said, Lindsay, for the next year, my ultimate goal is to preserve capital, not to grow it. Obviously, I want to grow it, but he just wanted to preserve capital. Are you in preserving capital mode or growing capital mode?
Well, I'm preserving capital, but forming the base for future growth.
Okay.
And why are we preserving it this year is that we had a very good year last year. And therefore, we ran ahead of earnings. And earnings have to catch up. So you're in that kind of mode where, you know, markets are not symmetrical. They don't just go up in a straight line. They do jump up and down. And I think, we're in that kind of area. But what you have to do is, though, you still have to position yourself and say, okay, while we're waiting, should I hold on to this? Nah, you know, it's got to do nothing. What's going to happen to this coming? Nah, let's get rid of that. And then look for the ones where things are starting to turn better, where they're still increasing their earnings, even though the share price might have run ahead of itself. So it's those kind of businesses that you know, I'm interested in.
So what you're doing at the moment, David, over the weekend, again, I'm interrupting you, you've been doing some spring cleaning.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and it's not so the kind of companies I've decided, the big one was to get rid of Berkshire.
Yes.
But on the other hand, for some time now, you know, we started the portfolios a long time. I might have had Verizon in, you know, and Verizon came out of, strangely enough, it was split out of Vodafone, which we got rid of a long time ago. But always held Verizon because it was giving a fairly decent return. But when we're going into 5G, I think the mobile businesses will lag. You know, I think they're not going to be able to keep up with the other infrastructure companies related to 5G, to cloud, and to those areas. So you'll be able to pick up better businesses and say, okay, look, I've done very well on Verizon. We have done well. Let's move it into something else where I think there's going to be better opportunity. So it's that kind of spring cleaning. I don't believe in the smoking companies, the Altrias and Philip Morris's and so on. I think ABM Bev's also having a very rough time. And so these might have been historically in portfolios. We've got rid of a lot of those. And then you start to look for other businesses that are going to emerge.
Yes.
And that's so when I call it spring cleaning, it's a nice way to put it.
Yes, indeed. It's actually quite interesting talking about the booze and the tobacco companies and the hospitality industries, because although the UK opened up over the weekend, you can just see it was just a splurge. Now, some people in Soho, one of my favourite areas of London, were going berserk on Saturday night, and there wasn't social distancing, and certain places had to be closed down by the police because people were behaving irresponsibly. But I was looking at an interview with the chief operating officer of a company called BrewDog, which started in Scotland. It's a so-called craft beer company, but they expanded so rapidly and did so well because it was such a cool brand that they've got 105 pubs that they own now. And the chap said, "Yeah, we've been decimated, and it's going to take a long, long time for us to get back." So you have to re-look at these companies before you start steaming in, which is why the stock market doing what it's doing is slightly worrying to me.
Yes, in those areas.
Mm.
In those areas. That's why you can't just buy the index.
No.
Yeah, don't. That's the whole point. This is it's stock picking, and you've got to be very careful where you pick. You know, those are the points. And that's why we're doing the spring cleaning now. So it's not the S&P, it's not the world market, you know, it's not MSCI or one of those world indices. It's saying, okay, these are the 15, 20, 25 companies I like. I'm going to go for them.
Quite so. Okay, so if we could tell what happened on the Stock Exchange and New Service today, if we can. Blue Label Telecoms came out with an initial trading statement for the year ended 31st of May, the share price up 7.75%. Do we even look at this company these days, or we just leave it alone and let it settle down? And that could take years.
I think it's going to take them a long time to find themselves. I mean, they blew off about $5.5 billion. Which is took a little bit of talent in such a short time, but I think they're trying to, you know, they're trying to get themselves back on. I watch them because I know the chaps, and they're really nice chaps. But I mean,
the two brothers, they really are nice chaps.
They are, and very magnanimous and very charitable. But I think they just took on a little more than they could actually handle. They didn't really know what they were, and they came back really hurt. And they should go back. They'd be better as private operators, to be honest, just running a private business there which sells airtime and goes into small little operations on the side.
Mm.
So, you know, what once They were little darlings when they came on now, but I think they've lost a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of reputational damage.
And I don't think it was them, actually. And you have to say that the investment banking industry probably came to them and put a couple of proposals on the table and said, this is what you should be doing. You should be levering up. You should be gearing up. Yeah. You're good at this and that. And I don't think that they sat down and said suddenly, wait a second, CLC looks like a good thing. I think it was put on their table and they were soft soaped into doing it. That's my personal view.
Lindsay, you know, every business should be run like a court.
Yeah.
You know, you should have a judge there. And you should have an advocate for the defense and an advocate for the state. Yes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're the CEO's advocate, you're the board, I'm going to act against it. And you've got to have those discussions. And that's one of the big problems around the board is that generally the CEOs get their way.
Mm.
And they bully or panel beat the non-executive directors and other people to believing what they want to do because they've worked on it. And this is another case. You know, you've got to have somewhat – every deal that you go into, you've got to be able to turn upside down and look at them. And too many deals in our corporate world have gone through that have completely decimated businesses. Yes. You know, we can start and talk about them forever. And that includes – you know, we could start with a big one, Steinhoff. We can go to Tongaat. We can just keep going, you know, all along, including Blue Label, EOH, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera.
Sasol.
And Sasol. Sasol's a huge one.
Mm.
250 billion rand.
Oh. Not down the drain, but certainly injudiciously deployed. Yeah. I mean, it'll take a long time to get that 250 back.
Yeah. Well, they're maybe at 80 or 90 billion now. With a lot of debt, whatever it is.
Mm.
So they're going to sell off little parts of it. But at one stage, it had a market cap of, I think, 500 billion, you know, down to 80. That's what's happened.
Mm.
And again, it comes down, this is the corporation. You know, this is not the economy. So, you know, that's the discussion.
Mm.
But no one gets away with it. You don't need, you know, at school, you'd get cuts. Right? Or you might even fail the standard, but not here. Nothing happens to you here in corporate world.
The other thing I think that most companies should have now is a psychologist. And I think the people that are doing really, really well and getting a little bit cocky and going out to too many lunches and saying, well, I've just made 20%, whereas Williams down the desk has only made 2% over the year. People should just say, right, sit down and have a chat and tell me about how your mind's working. That's what I used to work for a company that did exactly that. It was it would say, okay, I wasn't a trader, I was a broker, but the traders would have to, if they were shooting the lights out, the trader would then be pulled aside and say, okay, you've got to take a couple of weeks off now because you'd rather stop trading and do some admin or something because you're doing too well and it can't last forever. And there was some kind of rotation period, which was ahead of its time, but I think that every company should have someone that sits people down and says, "How's it going?"
Yeah, they don't. They don't do that. It's
of course not.
Human resources or HR. You know,
it's called human capital business. Now, by the way. It's not called human resources
capital,
anymore.
Fine, okay.
I hate
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, human capital, HC, whatever it is, I don't mind. You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
And you know, in every business, if you've got a machine, you've got mechanics there, and every few months. Or every month or so, they stop the engines and they stop the machines and they take the oil and they tighten the screws and they maintain it. We don't do that for our human capital.
You're very well said.
You know, we don't do that. In all the years, in 50 years that I've been working, I've never had someone come to me and say, human capital, and say, okay, I'm going to make an appointment with you. How are you going?
Yes.
How are things?
Yes, how's things at home with the wife?
How's
the
family?
I see you've just bought a new car. You've got a convertible. Nothing. Does that mean you're going through a midlife crisis? And what's going on
Whatever.
Here?
Yeah. Nothing. And I say this because I really like the people in our HC, and I get on very well with them.
Yes.
And it's not meant to dig at my own company. But I'm saying it's never happened. You know, people don't do that. And that's why, you know, you only get it when there's a problem, but they never check it, even now. And I think this was the ideal time for HC, for human capital, to make a mark. No one's ever phoned me here sitting in my little hole you know, where I am at the moment, this dark little dingy desk of mine, and someone say, "How are you going? You know,
yeah. How's your mental state?" Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And we should be doing that, actually.
Because we're human beings. It doesn't matter how many algorithmic how many algorithms there are running the market. The people that actually make the algorithms and the people that, as you quite rightly say, are the mechanics of the market are fragile individuals. How are you doing? Do you have I've watched so many programs in the last few weeks about how people's mentality is being challenged by this enforced isolation, and it obviously affects the way that you think.
Sure. Well, ask – you deal with a lot of people. You're speaking to someone every day. Ask everyone. Ask Mr. Kunze tomorrow, has his HR ever phoned him or HC?
I'm going to ask him tonight.
Maybe they're okay. Maybe they're fine. You know, I'm not saying he might be an exception, but I don't think we'd do that. The poor youngsters, I feel sorry for the bachelors, and I should say – for the females as well, who are single, staying at home, have been stuck in the offices now for 3 weeks, 3 months almost, not seeing anybody, just on their own, and that it's a terrible, terrible time. And I think for most single people, not only the youngsters.
Well, you live at home
with my wife,
with your lovely wife. Yeah. Don't say it like that. She's lovely. Please tell her to stop phoning me at night. Just joking. But no, seriously, David, I mean, this is a very personal question. How's your mental state? Has it changed in 3 months?
You know what? Of course, it has changed. I'm a very – thank goodness I'm working hard. You know, and I can always occupy myself. I read a lot. I do a lot of things. And
yes, because you're a positive person. Yeah.
I'm going to say this to you, and it mustn't be taken the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, look, I'm talking to you, but I miss the young people. I miss having young people around me because they keep you younger, if you know what I mean, which happens in an office, which happens when you kind of go out and or just break for tea or go for a cup of coffee with some youngsters. And that, you know, they're talking about what's happening at the ground. They talk a different language. And you learn a lot from them. I miss being surrounded by those people. You know, I can't see my kids at the moment. They're Australian and New York and that. But I miss the younger people. I'm tired of the old people.
Is that how you stayed young at heart, David? Because you are stricken in years, as I am as well. But I mean, you do maintain this sort of persona of youthfulness. Is that how you've done it, by keeping in touch with young people? Yeah, is that what you're saying?
I learned. Absolutely. And I learned there's an attorney, he's a big Arsenal supporter, Michael Juden.
Bad luck.
And Michael's a great chap.
Yes.
He's a massive Arsenal man. But I went to a talk where he was talking to old ladies, old grannies. He was giving a talk, and it was a very simple talk. And he said, you know what? If you want to get on with your grandchildren, you must learn, you must come down to their level. You must know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Don't try. Ask them what they're reading. Ask them what games they're playing. You know, ask them what music they're listening to. Don't try and force Mozart down their throats, or don't try to make them read William Thackeray and, you know, start giving them those lectures. Come down to their levels. You know, in other words, learn what they're doing. And it was a very, very valuable speech. And I've always done that with my grandchildren. You know, understand what they're doing. Try and understand how Fortnite works, you know, or try and understand those kind of levels. I always talk to my granddaughter about music, you know. I, funny enough, I quite enjoy it in that, but she'll always tell me, go and listen to this, or go and listen to this one, you know, which is, and I think from that way, you learn so much about what's happening, you know, with younger people, and it's important.
It really is. It's very good advice. And maybe your youthful attitude dictates your portfolio changing at the moment, because you're looking at things that young people are buying into. That's the whole point.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely right. You know, what shoes? My granddaughter came and said, look, these are the shoes I'm buying for. She's off to camp in America.
Yeah.
You know, they've opened up in Maine and that. And she'll tell me, you know, which Nike models they're buying, et cetera. And you can sense from how they act and what they're doing, you know, where the money's being spent, and how, you know, they don't go for big brands. It's funny, you know, these are Nikes, but I mean, they don't go for the rich brands or something like this. They've got, you know, and you learn a lot. You pick up a lot.
Well, this is maybe where Mr. Buffett is wrong, because if you spoke to millennials or people in their teens, people in their 20s, would they invest in a natural gas asset for $10 billion US dollars? They say no. Grandpa Shapiro, no, definitely not. You mustn't buy those companies. We don't like them, and that's the future.
I promise you, if I went to my grandson, Gideon, and I said, Gideon, give me 10 stocks.
Yeah.
And I went to Buffett, give me 10 stocks. I'm going to choose Gideon's 10 stocks.
It's fascinating.
I mean it. He's going to tell me. He'll tell me where they're spending, you know, what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay, quick one as we because I've kept you too long.
Not at all.
Quick one on football. Real Madrid look as though they're going to win La Liga, which pains me greatly, even though Barcelona won 4-1 last night. I saw Arsenal actually play not a bad game of football against Wolves, and they won 2-0. They seem to have consolidated because Wolves are on a hot streak at the moment. What did you think?
You know what they're playing? They've got three at the back now.
Mm.
So they've got David Luiz in the middle. So he can't do if he's on his own with only another centre.
No, he's rubbish.
He's terrible. So they've got to put him in the middle. And I think that's working. So it's a 3-5-3 combination.
Yes.
Which seems to have consolidated the defence.
Mm.
You know, and they look a lot more solid than they. And Wolves a good team, hey?
But they
then
really
you get Man City. And when you get Man City, I mean, they just take out Liverpool with the most beautiful soccer.
Yeah.
And then they struggle for 90 minutes to score. They just struggle.
I think that what's happening with the UEFA Champions League, don't you? That it's starting it's starting again on August the 9th, I think it is. And instead of the two-legged affairs, it's all being played in Portugal, and it's all knockout now. It starts, they'll be playing at the Benfica Stadium and the Porto Stadium.
Wonderful.
And it's a knockout tournament behind closed doors, obviously. I'm really looking forward to that. It's only a month away
that's
now.
Great.
It'll be great fun, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to wait 2 weeks and backwards and forwards. Oh, fantastic.
Mm. Anyway, David.
All right.
We shall speak tomorrow with David Kunze. But for now, that was Shapiro World. And David Shapiro is the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.